Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the hand of God, I know I can be home.
Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. I am your host, Craig Wynn, known affectionately by Yada, particularly to Yahweh, our God. We're going to pick up this evening where we left off last week. It's a frightening prophecy, and a prophet that very few people talk about, and yet one who had a lot to say about the events that are unfolding today. His name is Yoel. He is corrupted into Goel. Yoel has meaning. It's from Yahweh and El. It means Yahweh is God. He's very much like the prophet that is quite well known, who didn't actually write anything for us to read, Elia, known as Elijah, even though his name Elia means Yahweh is God. So Yoel and Elia, same name, just in a different order. It's like the successor to Moshe was Yosha, and the great prophet is Yahshua. The same name, just with Yahweh and salvation, in this case, Yahweh and El, God, in different orders. And that's important to know, because God has but one name. It's interesting that when his name is presented in someone else's name, for example, like the current prime minister of Israel today, what is his name?
Netanyahu.
What is Nathan mean in Hebrew?
A gift.
Gift, to give. And Yahu is the same as Yoel here, is the first two syllables of Yahweh's name. Yahu, Yahweh. So when it's part of another name, no one seems to have a problem pronouncing it. But when it's just Yahweh's name, oh boy, you can't pronounce that. Those are four consonants, and no one knows how to pronounce them. We got too much respect for him to say his name. What a bunch of malarkey. Big point.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, it's a yod, hey, wah, hey. The yod is pronounced, the y is pronounced just as it is in English. It is a vowel consonant in English. It's a vowel consonant in Hebrew, although it is more correctly considered one of the five vowels in Hebrew. There are 17 consonants, five vowels. The yod is pronounced as you would pronounce yes, yasha, ya. No one really has any question about it. It is the first letter of Yisrael. The hey is exceedingly easy to pronounce. It's the ah sound. It comes from the verb, haya. Yahweh told us his name, what it meant and the verb that it was based on when he introduced himself to Moshe when he said, I am who I am, Ihaya Asher, Ihaya. Haya is got two hays in it, and it's the two ach sounds in Yahweh's David. Of course, it also has a yod, so it tells you how to pronounce the Yah that is the beginning of his name. The W, which is a wah in Hebrew, is pronounced very similar to the way it is pronounced in English. And as a matter of fact, in the English language, there are probably 500 words that have an O preceding a W.
Mm-hmm.
So, owl is a is one of many examples. Own. Hundreds and hundreds of words that have an O-W sound to them, and that's the exact same sound as in Yahweh's name. The most obvious place is that religious Jews falsely claim that they're Torah observant, and they dress the Torah up like it's a whore. They really mean that they prefer the rabbinical arguments in their Talmud. But when they say Torah, they're pronouncing the wah sound, because Torah has a wah in it, and it creates the O sound. The most common word spoken amongst Jews for the past 2,000 years is shalom. The O sound in shalom is from the Hebrew wah. There's no question that it creates the O sound, and that its legacy is just like its legacy in the English language. In English, the Y is a vowel consonant, making the same sounds as it does in Hebrew, and the W is exactly the same, making the O sound, just as it does in English. And then Yahweh's name concludes with the ah sound. It's interesting, too, that a Hebrew word that ends in the hey, the ah sound, is almost always feminine. And so Yahweh's name actually has a feminine aspect to it. And God's very comfortable with that, because he has both a paternal and a maternal aspect to his nature. The state of heart, spirit, set apart spirit, Ruach Kodesh, is the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's nature. Ruach is a feminine noun. And the paternal nature of Yahweh is conveyed by his presence and his identity, as he explains that he is our God and our Father. So these are not difficult concepts. It's remedial, actually, and it's surprising that for the past 2,500 years, I don't think there has been anyone prior to this series of books, the Yahweh series, that has actually pronounced Yahweh's name correctly, or that has conveyed the reasons behind the pronunciation as we have done for the past 20 years. So it's one of the most profound prophecies about the job that we are performing on behalf of Yehudim, calling Yehudim home at this time, is that we are the first to recognize the proper pronunciation and the importance of Yahweh's name in some 2,500 years since Malachi was the last of the prophets. We're going to return to this passage in Yoel. It is 1-7 is where we left off. It is particularly pertinent this evening because today, as expected, the Nazi court declared that Jews are building homes and land that that they don't own, even though they bought it, even though God gave it to them, even though it has been part of their nation for years, even though the people that are squatting there don't belong, and it's obvious they don't belong, and even though building houses is about the most positive thing that you can do as a nation or culture, and the people that are trying to grab the land are best known as terrorists. But nonetheless, the Nazis at the World Court, part of the United Nazi Organization of Anti-Semites, voted, not surprisingly, to declare that all Jewish developments and homes and what they call the West Bank and Palestinian territory are illegal. Not smart enough to know that there is no such thing as a Palestinian, as Palestine, as Palestinian territory, that it is an outright lie. And it's a shame that Jews perpetuate this lie, that they will actually give voice to this myth of Palestine and Palestinian, and it gives credence to the great lie called the final solution, two-state solution. That's how the Nazis and anti-Semites and world leadership would refer to it, that the Palestinians deserve a state. No, they don't. They're Muslims. They're invaders. And they're ruthless terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve nothing. They ought to have been booted out of Israel a long time ago, and I can promise you that when Dode returns with Yahweh in short order, it's less than 10 years from now, October 2nd, 6:22 p.m., in 2033, is Yom Kippurim in year 6000. If you'd like to mark your calendars, I would strongly encourage you to be there on that date. First order of business will be to rid the world of Muslims, Christians, and Haredim. You're in progressives. You will all have the same faith, so don't gloat if you're wearing a rainbow flag or a black mourning suit. The same is going to happen to you even if your wife doesn't wear a burqa or you have four of them. This the passage says, my vine, and vine is from Geffen. Vine is a very important term with Yahweh. He uses many horticultural references because they resonate with people throughout the time. Even illiterate people, even people 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years ago understand horticultural references. And the vine is something that is known for producing grapes that then produce wine. And wine in the ancient world was really necessary for life. If you try to live together as a community and the water near a bunch of people, it would kill you. And so prior to learning how to treat water or boil water, the natural fermentation and with grapes producing wine was a way to have a beverage that could be consumed without deadly consequences. And so the other reason, by the way, that the vine, along with grain and with olives, are the three references that Yahweh uses routinely to describe things that he treasures, is that all of them are products that are harvested. And so he has a harvest of grain, for example, and he has a harvest of olives. But for those three things to be useful, they have to be crushed. And that's so true of human character, even of nations. Until we are tested, until we are hard pressed, we don't develop character, we don't develop resolve, we can't show that we are dependable and trustworthy and able to stand up against the crowd. So vines produce wine, which is then crushed in vats. Vines produce grapes, which are then, when crushed in vats, produce wine. So it is one of the horticultural references that is very important to Yahweh. You know, even when we talk about the others, and I think this is important because they're all our word pictures, and God likes to speak through word pictures. If you look at grain, it is so indicative of saved souls because vast majority of the plants, 99% of the plants, it dries up and is blown away by the wind. It's useless. It's chaff. And it's only that tiny little kernel that matters. And the next harvest, being Shavuot, is a wheat harvest. You look at wheat, it's got two rows of kernels, and one of those is Goyim, the other one is Yehudim, and they're side by side, just like the two loaves of bread that are raised up on this day. And then if you look at olives, which would be significant of the next harvest, which is Teruah, the Shavuah harvest will occur 7 years before Yahweh returns. The Shavuah that is 7 years before his return is on May 22nd, 2026, which is when I think the two-state final solution will be imposed on Israel with the war that is going to be so devastating that Yahweh has been speaking of breaking out about a year thereafter. In fact, I think the math is 13 months thereafter. So you look at olives, when they are crushed, they produce not only an exceedingly flavorful and nutritious food, olive oil. Olive oil is enormously healthy. One of the great accoutrements to almost any food. My personal favorite is to put olive oil with a variety of herbs and dip a flatbread in it. It's my favorite appetizer before a meal, or even as an adjunct to a meal. But with olives, you not only get a healthy and flavorful, nourishing food, but it produced the purest light in the ancient world. Olive oils and the olive oil lantern was extended the time that you could be together as a family and read and function in your home. And so it produced light. And equates himself to light and is very eager to enlighten his children and encourages us to read and recite his words. So that's the second aspect of olive oil. The third is actually a very healthy cure, a medicinal treatment. You put olive oil on a wound, and that wound will heal more quickly. And then there's also the fact that the olive tree is one of the most securely rooted and long-lived trees in Israel. So it speaks of all of those things. So those are the three metaphors that Yahweh uses to speak to the salvation of his people, of Goyim, of Jews, and of even the celebrating wine with the Moed Mikre as a means to celebrate this this great harvest that Yahweh is conducting. So this reads, "My vines will be set up for appalling desolation." That's why I mentioned the United Nazis in the World Anti-Semite Court that made the determination, and this is one of many, and they will continue to come, debasing and delegitimizing Israel such that they can impose a terrorist state for Muslims, which will make Israel so vulnerable there will be no way to defend the nation. And within a year of that time, it will be overrun by between 100 times and 1,000 times more Islamic terrorists than devastated Israel and Jews on October 7th of 2023. So he says, "My vine," and in this particular case, the vines that he cares the most about are the ones that he co-planted with his son, Dod, on the ridgeline, which would be Zion, of Mount Moriah. That is the garden that they grew between their two homes, Dod's home lower on the ridgeline, Yahweh's covenant family home on the summit. And there was a vineyard that God speaks of between the two. And he says, "My vines will be set up for appalling desolation. My fig tree, a fig tree is symbolic of the help of Israel. So when the fig is in leaf and fruitful, then the nation is healthy. Now, that doesn't happen very often with Israel. And when it's denuded of leaves, then we know that it is a time of trouble. And so Yahweh says, my fig tree, that is the nation of Israel, will become a splintered stump, snapped off and cut down, stripped bare, exposed and condemned, rejected and hurled away, its branches bleached and whitewashed. Yoel 1:7. There would be no reason for anyone outside of the covenant family who has grown and matured by going on this adventure through words with me as we have translated the Torah and prophets and the Psalms and writings in an amplified fashion and then sought to make the proper connections to increase our understanding. And by so doing, we have found and shared well over 1,000 profound insights that no one had ever spoken of in all of human history, and that had been presented for us to find between 2,500 and 3,500 years ago. So this is a rare treasure that you'll find woven all the way through Yada Yada with thousands of these unique insights. And about 7 or maybe 8 years ago, I was trying to do something that was just germane to the standard operating procedure that I had taken throughout my translations of the oldest extant witnesses, typically the Dead Sea Scrolls. A Masoretic text, if the Dead Sea Scrolls is not extant on a passage. And that is that I want to be consistent with word definitions. And that I want to also encourage us to provide a full definition of each word and as much of that definition of a word that applies within the particular context. And that's how I came up with this idea of an amplified translation. And the term's been used before, but no one's actually done it before. Now, if you read what's called an amplified Bible, it isn't even 5% beyond what is currently in others. So there really is no amplified version of Yahweh's testimony apart from what I began to do 20 years ago. And in our format, what we did is we took the essence of what God says and we put it in bold. Then we put the Hebrew word that was the basis of that translation, like a Geffen Ani, my vine, will be set up with some sim. We put that in a parenthetical within italics, so that for those that were reading online, and for all of you listening, if you go to Yada Yah, Yada means to know, Yahweh, or Yah.com, so Yada Yah.com, Yada Yahweh.com, either one will work, you'll go and you'll see the site that presents all of these books. They're all there free. By the way, we do have an announcement. We did receive another form letter from Amazon today. Earlier this week, they had sent me a form letter after that they had removed all of our content for bogus reasons with a computer-generated aggravation assault, really, of form letters. I decided that I would yank the chain. And I was I wrote them. I shared with this to be, and I think with you, sir. I wrote them back in an exceedingly sarcastic tone, as writing pretend people whose names had been generated at random by an rather than artificial intelligence, it was artificial unintelligence. And I just mocked them. At this point, why not? And we got a form letter today that says, you know, we appreciate your last response, and as a result of your last response, we're reinstating your account. And so I went back to the site, every one of our books is back up. Now, that's the thing that caused the irritation in the first place was ebooks with Amazon. The first thing that you did, remove all the ebooks. And we're in the process, by the way, of all the images for the books. We're either going to supply our own artwork, our own photograph, or we're choosing artwork and photographs where there is such a clear chain of title, where there is a copyright holder. The copyright holder is known. They have a very public way of showing that you paid for the rights to use them. So we are doing that. So we'll have different images on our books. But anyway, the Amazon site's back up, which means you can buy hardbacks and paperbacks there. That does not mean that we're going to rest comfortably and say, boy, I'm sure they'll never send us another one of those series of form letters. So what we are doing is, for those who have been with us for a long time, they know real well, my good friend Joe from many, many years back. He is now creating for us our own Yada Yada bookstore, where we'll have a fuller range of Yada Yada books. We'll probably also have other printed goods that help promote Yada's name. And in that store, we can do whatever we want, and no one's going to bother us. And we're going to then link to a print-on-demand company, and there are two of them that will serve this purpose quite well. And then we'll do that probably for all of the paperbacks, maybe for hardbacks too, but in our own store. We'll continue for as long as they will play nice with Amazon on hardbacks and paperbacks. But as I said, we've just discontinued all of our ebooks with Amazon. Now, we really don't need an ebook because of the fact that there's that EPUB option and a PDF option and a download option and a read online and it's formatted properly for any device option,
right.
All of which exists currently on the Yada Yada site that David has built for us. And it is magnificent the way that it functions. We are in the process of figuring out how, with minimal personal involvement, we can have ebooks available to Apple. Since many people are goo-goo over Apple, I am not an Apple guy. I say I'm bananas when it comes to Apple. I have an Apple device, but I don't think I have used it in 3 years. So. It's something, though, that I know people are crazy about, their iPhones and their iPads and this sort of thing. So we will have ebooks that are easy for Apple users. And then we're going to Barnes & Noble to do our hardbacks and sell them in their store, which would increase our outreach as well. So we are going to broaden the methods by which books get into people's hands, because I think it's very important. And that's something that Jackie, who is our publicist and exceedingly devoted family member, and her team are all working on at this point to expand. Also, while we're talking about these things, there is now a series of YouTube channels. We've had one that's Yada Yada for quite some time that does a very, very nice audio presentation of these programs and has for many years. Steve is the first that put that up for us. And they're beautifully organized and searchable at YouTube. At YouTube, search Yada Yada, and it'll take you right to them. In the last couple of weeks, we have also created a Yada Yah Radio and Yada Yahweh on YouTube, and we will develop probably another 4 or 5, 6 YouTube channels, so we're a little more diversified because they have these artificial unintelligence bots that they go in and take things off. I laugh mm-hmm. because one of the great examples was I happen to be pro-vaccine. I think vaccines are exceedingly beneficial for society. And so I did a show speaking of the great benefits to society of vaccines over the many years. And because they had a progressives didn't want anyone saying anything bad about vaccines during the COVID outbreak, and they wanted everyone to take them. It turned out the vaccines for COVID didn't have much effect. It didn't cause much damage, but didn't have much benefit either. It had a working period of weeks or months, and you could be triple vaccinated as I was, and I still got COVID 3 times. My wife got it 4 times. I know Jackie's family has just come down with COVID again. Dee, you've had it recently. Kirk, you've had it quite recently. The vaccine made really no difference, and even you didn't even gain immunity from the disease itself. So when I did this show talking about the benefit of vaccines because of the nature of these unintelligent bots, we were suspended from YouTube for violating their policy on vaccines. It was a scientific approach to the history of vaccines. So, you know, we're going to have a number of sites because they are they're unreasonable. And most of these companies now, like Amazon, you can't talk to anybody. It's all you fill in a form, and it has you get a computer-generated form letter response. Anyway, I would strongly encourage you to go to Yada Yah Radio now and view what we call these talkies, which are excerpts of these programs with the words playing behind them in a graphic format. And they are compelling, they're powerful, they're gut-wrenching, they drive right to the heart of the purpose of our calling. So it's a huge step in what we are doing as a covenant family. All right, so I'm making a big deal about something, obviously. I'm writing to a point. And my point is, when we read, and my fig tree will become a splintered stump, snapped off and cut down, stripped bare and exposed, condemned, rejected and hurled away, its branches bleached and whitewashed. Now, why would I make a big deal of that? What am I seeing there besides just another horticultural reference that speaks of what's going to happen? It's going to be devastating within 3 years of this time in Israel. Now, those who have been part of this covenant family over the years know. And that is that, well, Yahweh introduced this role in the first chapter of the first book in the Torah. The most detailed presentation of the job that I've been assigned to do, which is to call Yahweh's people home prior to his return to increase the harvest. In fact, increase it would be there would be none, and now there will be thousands. It's presented in the 11th chapter of Yeshayah, my favorite prophet, known as Isaiah. And he presents a choder. And that choder is a secondary branch. And that choder has rootstock that is growing out of the stump that brought us goat, the Messiah, the Son of God, our Savior. And so all of that is conveyed in this. The great olive tree and fig tree that has been at times Israel has been and will be again cut off. A chota is also a sucker. It grows up from that fallen stump, giving that tree life, causing it to bear fruit again. And as a chota, I am a secondary branch. As a matter of fact, it's something that I think, Dee, you have pointed out, and I think that it is likely true, that Dode clearly represents the tree of life in the garden. But the role that we have been asked to play, to awaken, to enlighten, to teach Yisrael so that they are prepared to meet Yahweh upon his return, is a tree of knowledge. Disputing that which is wrong and extolling that which is right. So, God places within his references, particularly when he's dealing with important dates. And this is an important date. This is the last battle fought in Israel. And it begins in June of 2027, 13 months after the peace treaty is affirmed with many that imposes a Muslim terror state upon Israel at the time of the Shavuot harvest. And that would mean it's 2 years away from the gleaning that will take place. Well, I guess, excuse me, 2027 is 6 years away from the gleaning that will take place on Teruah in 2033. So all of that is being conveyed there. So the vine's going to be that Yahweh has set up, those that he has set up with Dode, those vines are symbolic of Zion, which is actually means signs posted along the way, are being set up by world leaders and by religious zealots for appalling desolation. And God is telling us and his people the truth. He's warning them that the fig tree will become a splintered stump, snapped off and cut down. Fortunately, there will be a sucker, a chota, that will grow from that fallen stump. And the limbs that are stripped bare and rejected, there is a chota, a secondary branch that will resolve that which has been bleached and whitewashed by religion. This statement in Yoel 1:13, or then that's 1:7, 1:13 then reads, even the sacrificial offerings which bestow a share and drink offerings which anoint will be withheld from the family of your God. In 2030, and we've been able to put these pieces together because one of the unique things about this study, and we've been doing it now for 23 years, is that we've always those who where the words lead, and I may have lots of rough edges, but there's an attribute that I possess that God likes to use, and it is one that I'm now just beginning to fully appreciate how good Dode, God's firstborn son and Messiah, his chosen one, was at this particular skill, which is making connections between things. And if you were a child and you ever did dot-to-dot puzzles, and maybe I'm dating myself and they may no longer be vogue, but a dot-to-dot puzzle, you would start with the first number one, and you would draw a line to the two, the three, the four, and what was just a maze of dots then becomes a picture of something. And the same thing is true with Yahweh's testimony. You can look and there's a sea of words. But if you make the right connections between things, that sea of words forms a picture or a portrait of something that is very important for us to know and for us to share. And so as we read through the various prophets and we put the pieces together, we're able to form a timeline. And to tell you what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. And we've already shared some dates with you. In this particular case, we have figured out both through things that Yahweh inspired and that which Satan inspired. The book of Ezekiel, for example, is inspired by Satan. It fails every aspect of Yahweh's test in the body in 18. But that book explains, Satan is very clear about what he seeks to achieve. So it actually is helpful to understand. So I have two volumes that are devoted to it in the Babel series that you'll find on the bookshelf at BIDO. And in this particular case, between that and what we read Dod, who is Gabriel, I don't know how people came up with the notion, Christians started it, I think, that Gabriel was an angel. He's not. He's the word means man. It means confident, capable, courageous man. It's from Gabur, ultimately, and Gabur means man. Even in Daniel, who was not a prophet, but he was literate, so he could write down what the prophet showed, as Gabriel said. Even he said he was a man. So this really isn't all that difficult. But Gabriel, who is God, happens to be the Messiah, and he was talking about what he himself was going to do, including fulfilling Masa Pesach Masa Bekudim in year 4000 Yahweh, which occurred in 33 CE. And then he goes forward, talks about his return, and all of the bad stuff that's going to happen immediately preceding his return. And then he provides actual numbers and dates regarding these things that enable us to fine-tune God's timeline so we know exactly what's going to happen, when, where, why, and how it will all occur. We have, and he was the principal author of this, we have the timeline at the yadayah.com site. You go to resources, it's the first thing in the upper left-hand corner. When you go to resources, it takes you all the way back to creation and then to the garden and all the way to the end of time as we know it. And so as we're putting all of these pieces together, we're able to determine what's going to happen when. And one of the things we learn is that the corporeal manifestation of Satan is going to return on the first of Abib in year 2030. And that is just prior to the time that after the Shavuot harvest, I'm going to return, and it's going to be a witnesses. I think Eliyahu will be joining me. There are others that that think that will be acting under the authority of Dod. And I don't know what role Dod will play in this. It's, the reason I'm a bit hesitant is that the way that Yahweh has explained all of this is that Dod, his son, is going to be a chip off the old block. He is going to lead as Yahweh does. He's going to communicate as Yahweh does. He's going to act as Yahweh does. And if you look at Yahweh, he always works through people. He delegates. And it's not just because he likes to delegate. He likes to achieve things together. Dod is going to do exactly the same thing. So I'm more comfortable seeing Dod instructing both Eliyahu and myself as we provide a final witness preparing Yisrael for the upcoming Teruah harvest, which will take place 10 days before Dod's and Yahweh's return.
That explanation. That's very interesting. Yeah.
So that's my thought on the process. But what we know is that 2 weeks, 14 days to be exact, before we arrive on Passover in 2030, 3.5 years before Dod and Yahweh return in the fall of 2033, which is year 6000 Yah, that the corporeal manifestation of the adversary will appear. The adversary is a very real individual. He was first introduced in the garden. His method of operation is to misappropriate, misconstrue Yahweh's testimony and twist it to serve his purposes. He played the role of the serpent in the garden. He is the voice of the book of Ezekiel. Everything in Ezekiel explains who he is and what he is trying to achieve. And he is the one who inspired Paul to write most of the Christian New Testament. And he is clearly manifest through Muhammad. In fact, both Muhammad and Paul admitted that they were demon-possessed by Satan. So there have been corporeal manifestations of Satan in the past. Well, he did not say so. One would think that Adolf Hitler may well have had a little satanic influence. Hadrian is another person that I would not be surprised when you look at the carnage and their hatred of the Jewish people. But clearly the two that I know the best that I have written 9 books about through Christianity and through goddamn religion are Paul and Muhammad. They both created religions that are exceedingly anti-Semitic and hostile to Jews, and both of them admitted in their own scriptures that they were demon-possessed. So this corporeal manifestation of Satan will be very much like Muhammad, be very much like Paul. If you read what the Quran and Hadith have to say, which you can do by going to Goddamn Religion on the bookshelf of yadayah.com, there's 5 volumes that present everything that can be known about Muhammad and Allah. I think it is, in fact, overwhelmingly the most comprehensive analysis of the 5 oldest books that exist in Islam, and explains exactly why Muslims did what they did to Jews on October 7th and what they will do, which will be 100-fold to 1,000-fold worse in the coming 3 years. Read it and you'll understand your enemy and why this enemy hates you so. So this is going to be the best way for Jews to recognize what the Torahless one is going to be like. You know, there's that Left Behind series by LaHaye has him being quite, devilish and the Antichrist. And the fact is that Christ is a complete myth. He most certainly will not be an Antichrist. He'd be all for Christ, as a matter of fact, because Christ is a replacement dose, a counterfeit for dose. He'll be pro-Christ. He'll be anti-Torah, as was Paul. He'll be anti-Jew, as both were Paul and Muhammad, and exceedingly egotistical as well, making all manner of promises that he can't keep, and his God will be Satan, just as was the case with both Paul, the Christian New Testament, and with the Muhammad in the Quran. So, this individual who is going to eliminate the feast that is being spoken of here is the corporeal manifestation of Hasatan, the enemy. You can read specifically about what he's going to do in the book of Ezekiel. He ultimately has All Stupid Day, which is just perfect for him. Now, these are my summations of what they represent, but if you look at the terms that are used in Ezekiel by Satan to explain what he's going to do, it's the 2 most important replacement feasts are All Stupid Day and the Feast of the Beast. And the Feast of the Beast is his favorite. It's not my favorite personally because both Zod and I are on the menu. It's cannibalistic. And the returning Gabor, their flesh is to be consumed, and their blood is to be consumed as well. So it's a little creepy skin on the menu. But I guess if you're going to aggravate somebody to that point, that they want to serve your blood and your flesh, Satan's the person that I would like to aggravate to that point. I appreciate the honorable mention. Not the last.
That's funny.
These are the things that will be imposed. Things like the Feast of the Beast and All Stupid Day. There is only 2 or 3 of Yahweh's 7 Moed Mikre that are continued, but they are completely inverted, so that the opposite of what God says is their purpose is stated as the throughout Ezekiel. So that's what he's talking about here, is that the feast will be made illegal. Now, the fact of the matter is there's not a lot of difference between that and what we experience today. For example, in Israel, they will celebrate the holiday of Passover. So Passover is not a holiday, and it's only one day, not 7 days. And it's matzah that is 7 days, and Passover just happens to be the first day of matzah. And if you don't celebrate matzah, which rabbinic Jews do not do, matzah is just an ingredient, unyeasted bread, to be served at Passover, which the only reference to the lamb is the zeruah, which is a bone that is thrown on the plate. Little did they know that the zeruah is the title that Yahweh affords three individuals. Moshe, the great zeruah, is Dod, and myself is one who sows their seeds so that they can ripen and mature for the harvest. We're going to a period where there isn't much difference in that the seven Moed Mitzvah are so corrupted. They say in Rabbinic Judaism, there is no celebration of Matzah, there is no celebration of Bukurim. They don't know that Passover opens the door to life, that Matzah is designed to protect us, that Bukurim means firstborn children were adopted into Yahweh's home and family, enriched and empowered. They have no clue whatsoever that Dod fulfilled these first three Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah, which would be 33 CE, becoming the Passover lamb, opening the door to both his father's home and to eternal life, but perfecting us in the process by having his soul carry our guilt into Sheol and deposited it there. He was released into his father's care on the Bukurim, becoming the firstborn of the firstborn children. And because of what he did, and the recognition and acceptance of what he did, we can sow the seeds that will grow into a wonderful harvest of Yisrael and Yehudim and Goya on Shavuot, which is coming up in 2 years. Well, these are going to be illegal. But, you know, again, try to celebrate Sukkah or Kippurim or even Teruah correctly in Israel today. The rabbis would have to do it. They don't even mention Teruah, and Teruah is the harvest of Jews. It's the right. One particularly that Yahshua speaks of when he speaks of the uppermost branches, and then the branches that have been cut off, and gives the numbers that will come from each of those, where the uppermost branch is Yehudim, Jews, and the branches that were cut off, the lost tribes of Yisrael. And yet they will completely ignore that, and they celebrate on that day, Rosh Hashanah, which is the head of the year. It's a Babylonian holiday. It's nice to be with their Babylonian Talmud, I suspect. And then when Dod and Yahweh come back to reconcile the relationship with Yisrael, and the relationship has been as fractured with the Messiah, Dod, our Savior, as it has been with Yahweh, whose name isn't even mentioned by Jews. What Jews have done on this day that means to reconcile, to purge of problems, of guilt, is they call it a day of affliction. So their idea is that the day that Yahweh is coming back to celebrate a family reunion is a day of affliction for them. And it probably will be, because the world will be rid of them once and for all. And as I've always said, at least they're dressed for their own funeral in the case of rabbis. So this is what's going to happen. And there is absolutely no understanding of any of these dates or any proper celebration of them amongst Jews, apart from the covenant family, who have come to this knowledge by reading the translations of Yahweh's testimony found throughout Yahweh. So It will be, however, illegal. And one of the things that is interesting is that the celebration of the Shabbat will be illegal as well. But right now, it's punitive. So maybe making it illegal is a step in the right direction, because rabbinic Jews have found a thousand ways to make it the most difficult and laborious day of the week, where they have thousands of rules as to what you can't do. When the Shabbat was really a very simple concept. It's based on the verb Shabbat, and it's a day that Yahweh happens to be the most active when he does his best work, when he is in the business of reconciling the relationship with his people. So it's a day to celebrate the relationship. Those things will be made illegal during 2030 on our calendar based upon ancient Rome. This would be 3 years prior to year 6000 Yah. And if you're a Jew listening to this, hey, no, it's not, you know, we're not 6 years, well, now it would be 9 years, 9 years away from year 6000 Yah, 240 some odd years away. Maimonides gave us that calendar. Yeah, he was an idiot. Total and complete blunder. And all you have to do is to read his analysis. He was outthought by B. By he simply used the information that Yahweh provided in the Torah with the genealogies and was able to determine what happened in each year. Now, she got a little bit of a head start in that I told you I was good with the dot to dots and jigsaw puzzles. I know how things fit together. I was able to discern some 20 years ago that in year zero is when Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden, and that year 2000 Yah is when Abraham and Yitzhak underwent the dress rehearsal for Pesach on Mount Moriah. That was 20 Yobel. Yobels are times years where slaves are freed, so there's liberation. Think of another Yatsa Exodus, where all debts are forgiven. Sins no longer matter. Your guilt has been taken away. And you return to the land, which is to live in God's presence. That's the theme of the Yobel years. They occur every 7 times 7 plus 1 year. They are on the model of Bukudim, and on Shavua would be the model that they follow. So 40 Yobel from year 0 is year 2000 Yah. That would be 1968 BCE. And on 1968 BCE, on Passover, after a three-day walk, Abraham and his beloved son, Yitzhak, went to Mount Moriah, where God said, do not take the life of your son. I will provide the lamb. And he did with his beloved son, Dod. I told you that I have grown in my appreciation of Dod. Dod figured out that this everything had been set up for him to play the role of the Passover lamb. And at the time, Dod figured this out. He only had two things. He had the Torah, which he was able to deduce his role as the sun in the fourth day of creation, knew that he, as the sun, was going to do something as the greater luminary, the greater light, that he was going to do something extraordinary in year 4000 Yah, which will be the next mark on our journey here. He also recognized that when Abraham and Yitzhak, firstborn son, presented as the firstborn son, because there's a son that God, that Abraham loved, went to Mount Moriah, and Yahweh says, don't take the life of the son you love. I'm going to provide the lamb. Dod saw himself in that role. Mm-hmm. And then as he was reading the Torah, And it is that magnificent speech that Moshe makes about, it's in the body in 18, the 18th chapter of Deuteronomy. And he's talking about the role that the Lowi are intended to play to keep Yisrael informed about the Torah. And then speaks of this great travesty of the Jewish people's propensity to be religious, particularly following in the ways of the Goyim, integrating religion and politics and talking about the consequence of that. And then the cure for that is this person who's going to come that is going to be like Moshe, in other words, a prophet and a liberator, a savior, if you will, of his people, but that will be from you, out of you. And he goes on to describe this person's attributes, and he's speaking to Dode, and Dode would have recognized himself in that speech.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Dode was lamenting towards the end of his life about the fact that he had this beautiful house, and that Yahweh was in the tent of the witness behind curtains, Dode says, I'm really uncomfortable. I got this beautiful house of cedar, and Yahweh was out there in a tent. And so God had one of the greatest speeches of all time talking about, did I ever once tell the children of Israel, that I saved from Mitzrayim, that I wanted them to build me a house out of cedar? At any time did I tell them that? What part of this don't you get? I am the father, you are the children. It's my responsibility to build you houses, not you to build me houses. A concept the religious never got, with all their houses of God. It's one of the great speeches of all time. But in that speech, Yahweh goes on to explain exactly who Dode is. You are my son. I am your father. And I'm returning you to be the king of Israel and the universe. And so he would have had that information as well. And from all those things, he deduced that it was appropriate for him to do this, to offer us the greatest gift in the history of humankind, to serve as the Passover lamb, opening the doorway to life in God's home, and then doing that with his corporeal body, his bashar, and then with his soul, his nefesh, carrying our guilt with him into Sheol, depositing it there and never to be seen again, making us perfect, such that he would be reunited with his father on Bakuda, so that the firstborn would fulfill firstborn children. And the realization that he not only did this, but that provided us with an eyewitness account of it within his Mizmor, particularly within Mizmor 22 and 88, and described throughout his first 30 Mizmor exactly why he was going to do this, and that it was his decision, something that Yahweh approved, figuring that out, that Dode is not only the Messiah and Son of God and returning Savior, but that he is the Passover Lamb, was the greatest discovery of the past 3,000 years. And while we take a sense of comfort in knowing that we were able to deduce that, the first people to deduce it in 3,000 years, Dode beat us to it. And the difference is that he had 1% as much to work with as we did. But that is the essence of this family of God, and how we go about participating in it is that we have to understand what Dode is offering, and that it is Dode who was anointed to fulfill these things, and that the purpose of Satan, as it's declared here in Yoel 1:13, is to deprive God's people of these things. And it is my job in working with Eliyah in the end, working with the covenant family today, to make Israel aware of these things so that they are not deprived of them. The most recent Islamic assault on God's people ravaged southern Israel. Hezbollah, which means Allah's party, that's a name that is actually written in the Quran on two occasions, is trying to burn down and devastate northern Israel. But for the most part, it's been brushlands, and while it was kibbutzim, the fields themselves weren't ransacked. So God's not discussing what happened on October 7th of 2023. Although I will tell you that there is an interesting marker here, because on October 7th in 2033 is when Sukkah will be fulfilled in year 6000 Yah, when the earth is returned to the conditions enjoyed in the Garden of Great Joy of Eden, and we come full circle and we are returned to the conditions of Eden. It's exactly 10 years to the day when that occurred. So since the devastation of the olive trees and the fields did not occur on October 7th of 2023, this is a far more egregious attack on Israel, and this next time farms will not fare as well. These devastating and depopulating attacks on Israel are going to lead to a spiritual assault as well, when the corporeal manifestation of the adversary appears in an attempt to forestall the benefits of the Mikra. It is something that I constantly reminded readers of as I was writing the Babel series on excoriating the book of Ezekiel, and then all five volumes of Goddamn Religion, that to a very significant degree, after this time, the principal battles that exist in the world as it relates to those who will either spend their eternity with God or apart from Him is this war that is being waged between myself and the adversary, HaSatan. For Satan to prevail, and his goal is not to be cast into Sheol at the end. And his means to that goal has been to fool the world, including and mostly Jews, into believing that he is God. That he became the God of Islam. He is the God of Christianity. And he is very much the God of Rabbinic Judaism, of the Haredim. Mm-hmm. And so if he can convince people that he is God, then they are not going to know the real God. And if he can't convince you that he is God, the reason that Christianity and Islam are so viciously anti-Semitic and deadly, with one creating the environment that led to the Holocaust and the other declaring war on Jews and trying to commit genocide on them for the past 1400 years, beginning with genocide of the Jewish people in Arabia under Muhammad's leadership. If he can kill every Jew, and the book of Ezekiel actually depicts 25 different ways to kill Jews, then there is no return to a remnant of God's people. If he can kill every Jew, half of those being harvested on Shavuot aren't there. And Shavuot is not fulfilled. If he prevails in convincing either killing Jews or causing them to be religious and therefore not engaged in a relationship with Yahweh, there is no Teruah harvest. The prophecy goes unfulfilled. And worst of all, there's no remnant of Israelites to reconcile for the family reunion when Yahweh and his son does return on Yom Kippur. And so if he can, and he did, he was batting 1,000. He hadn't lost anyone for 2,500 years. For 2,500 years, every Jew on the planet was estranged from Yahweh. And so the purpose of this mission is to change that, because if there are no Jews to return to, no Yehudim, on Yom Kippur, there is no reason for father and son to come back. They're not going to come back for a family reunion without family. So things did change. If we did not convince Yehuda to walk away from religion and politics and to finally forego that which has estranged them from God and to embrace Yahweh by name through his Moed Mikre, through his Bereth covenant, and most especially by coming to understand the great gift that God, to their Savior, their Messiah and King, is offering, that there will be many Yehudim and Yisraelites there for Teruah, and a wonderful remnant of God's family waiting for Yahweh and God as they return. And so long as we have a family to return to based upon this message, then Satan loses. He's immediately escorted into Sheol. If there's no one to return to, God has no reason to come back. The earth will be depopulated, but what is Satan care? He's a loner. He's a loser. He's a recluse. He is a snake after all. You don't see snakes typically dancing with other snakes. Den is a single file and usually one snake. So he doesn't care. He gets to avoid going to Sheol. And that is the battle that we're fighting. It is very much a spiritual battle. And it's important that you know that this is what's occurring. The next passage from Yoel, Yahweh is God 1:14, reads as follows. It says, dedicate as special and set apart. Abstinence is fasting. Announce by reading and reciting an invitation, Kara, to an assembly to meet. Gather for the harvest, Eshaf. The prominent and mature, to the kin, and all of the inhabitants of the land, to the home and family of Yahweh, your God. Then cry out to summon Yahweh. Yoel was inspired to say what I just told you. That the smart move for you, if you are a descendant of Jacob, if you are a Yisraelite or Yehud Jew, is to announce by reading and reciting Korah, which is the basis of Mikra, which are the title that Yahweh used to describe his seven annual invitations to be called out and meet, that we gather and meet on those days, recognizing that there is a harvest approaching, which is Shavuot, that there is a gleaning approaching, which is Teruah, and recognizing that the final remnant of God's people will be gathered unto him at the ultimate family reunion on Kippur. They're saying, gather to the harvest. The prominent and mature, Zaken, is an inside reference to the harvest of Shavuah, because Shavuah is a wheat harvest, and the Hebrew word for wheat, the basis of that word, means to be prominent, to stand out, to be exceptional, to stand up against the crowd, to do what we're doing, to tell people what they need to hear, even if it's the opposite of what they hear through their religion and through politics. To stand out, be prominent, and to be mature, which is what Zaken means. So it's prominent and mature grain represented by the Hebrew word for wheat. So it's an inside reference to that. And all of the inhabitants of the land to the home and family of Yahweh. The home of Yahweh is not just Yisrael, not just Yahuda within Yisrael, not just Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, means the source of reconciliation, the instruction on the source of reconciliation. Not just Jerusalem, not just Moriah, not just the Temple Mount, but all of it. All of these things represent God's home, and he's going to transform the entire earth into his home. His family, right, is not just the remnant and harvested children of Yisrael, but the covenant. It's the Bereth. It is the family that God created the universe to enjoy. So he's calling his people home, calling them to the bereft family, calling them to gather for the harvest, calling them to be prominent, to stand out and be mature in his testimony, assemble and meet, and then cry out to summon Yahweh. And this is even telling, because in the book of Zechariah, we're told explicitly that this final remnant of Israel will look up to Yahweh, and accompanied by the one who was pierced, and they will wail for him as for a firstborn. Well, the firstborn is Dod. It's Dod that was pierced, and it's Dod that is returning with Yahweh. And they're going to cry out at this time. It's going to be a bittersweet, because those that are part of the remnant on Kippurim will have figured out that Yahweh is God and will accept him by name, and that Dod is the Messiah and Savior. They will figure this out in 10 days. They will have missed, those who are part of that remnant will have missed the Teruah harvest, which is 10 days prior to Kippurim.
Right.
So these are not the mature and prominent, but these are very important remnant of God's people, because the harvest of Teruah is going to precede that. And the reason that Teruah harvest is so close to the end is that that final 10 years is going to be so God-awful, hellish, that God wants to remove his family from it. It's the very reason why Teruah harvest occurs 7 years before Yahweh's return, at the beginning of the time of Yahweh's troubles, of Israel's troubles, because there's no reason for those who have chosen to be part of Yahweh's family, who have come to God through what he has said in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, who have read Yada Yada, who come to know Yahweh, to endure this great insult to God, to his son, to his people, to his Torah, to his Mikra. It would just simply make everybody angry. It's kind of like reading the news today. Hard to do, because it's distracting, because it makes you so angry that people could be that stupid. In the international court to make that kind of a determination, that Israel was wrong to build houses on land they own and land that was deeded to them by God, and that somehow the terrorists are more deserving than they. It's irritating to know that people in positions of power are that universally stupid. God doesn't want us to have to deal with it. So he's harvesting and gleaning and then returning to his people. And that is what Yoel 1:14 says. The whole prophetic texture of the book of Yoel is so powerful and poignant to our time.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important to do all of the above, everything that God just proclaimed. His people must abstain from what the world is dishing up, particularly at this time. As always, but particularly now, it's critical that we remain special and distinct from a planet in the throes of spiritual death. Our whole planet is headed in a death spiral, led by the plague of death, calling Christianity, and the death cult that is Islam. There's no better time to invite those who are interested to meet with God, doing so by reading and reciting his appeal to them. And that's what you find in Yada Yada. We're reminded that this ingathering is for the prominent and mature, which comprise the covenant family, all who will have been brought home during the Shavuah harvest of standing grain. And when it comes to summoning Yahweh by name, they will have chosen him now. prior to 2026, prior to the worst of the time of Israel's trouble, rather than later or never. And that would be my strong encouragement to everyone listening to this program. I've said this a number of times previously. If you come to know Yahweh, reading Yahweh, and you accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, and you attend the Moed Mikre, understanding what they mean, and you grow in your knowledge of God and of our Savior, then not only do you have the world's greatest life assurance policy, nothing bad can happen to you. All you have is an eternity of being enriched and empowered and emancipated and enlightened by Yahweh in your future. But you have the opportunity to return the favor. You can be part of those who is reaching out to Yisrael, to Yehuda. That's why I so love this, the things that are being done on YouTube now with our movies with the audio over them. They are so compelling to God's people. It's the most effective means yet to convey what Yahweh wants his people to say, because you're able to combine the written word, which God loves, with the passion of the spoken word. So it is a real positive development in this regard. So this is our mission, and if you become part of the covenant family sooner rather than later, then you have the chance to help us, help Dode, help Yahweh, help the covenant family, reach out to others, and increase the quality and size of God's family, so that other people choose our Heavenly Father as well. If you don't, then you're going to go through that 7 hellish years. You might not even survive. So that you can be part of the true harvest. Why put yourself through all of that and recognize how little you're going to contribute to the family in that 7 years? Because the principal voice that's going to be communicating is Yada and Elia. And Yahweh is going to be empowering us in very powerful ways during this time. Wouldn't you rather spend eternity with Yahweh as your Heavenly Father, knowing that you made a contribution to the family?
Absolutely. I would.
I would as well. And this is why I would encourage all Yisrael and Yehudim to join the covenant family, to be part of the Shavuot harvest, and to help us communicate this message. Yoel 1:15 reads, "This is a notification to those approaching this day, because the day of Yahweh is near. A great force will be exerted upon the arrival of Shaddai, the one who is satisfactory and sufficient." That's what this is. That's the purpose of Yada Yada. All of the 35 books that comprise this series. It is a notification. God is putting his people on notice that this day is approaching. And as we share it here on a Shabbat evening, Friday, the 19th of July, 2024, with you, his return is just 9 years away, but it's going to be the most hellish 9 years in the history of our planet. And if you're listening to this program, the odds are that 9 out of 10 people that are alive today will not be alive 9 years from now. So you're being put on notice. The time is approaching. It's near. And a great force will be exerted. God is not coming back with open arms, waiting to save the world. He's going to terraform. Everyone who has been against his people will be annihilated. If you're not part of the covenant family and you haven't overtly antagonized his people, the best you can hope for is to endure and enter the final Shabbat as a servant to those who are part of the covenant family. Otherwise, your soul is being extinguished, which is not a penalty, but not a favorable outcome, or
right.
Your soul is sent to the place of separation, which is Sheol, for an eternity of separation from God and his family. And that is a punishment. That is for Muslims who attacked Jews, for Roman Catholics who tortured and tormented Jews, for Europeans who did this same thing, for the conspiratorialists that speak against Jews, for the progressives who condemn God's people and his place, Israel. So you're being put on notice. God is coming back with considerable force showed upon his arrival of Shaddai. And Shaddai is one of my favorite terms because it is just so Yahweh. Yeah, it's just so Yahweh. Well, it's it's rendered by people who don't know what the word actually means, but mm-hmm. don't know who God is, is the Almighty, or the ultimate, the greatest, the highest of high, the most high. That's not what the word means. The word means satisfactory and sufficient.
Okay. And this was the primary term Yahweh used to introduce himself to Yaakov and to Yitzchak and to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
So he's speaking directly to his people with using it today here.
What it means is, I'm satisfied for omniscience. Everything you need to become immortal, so that you live forever, everything you need to be perfected so you can enter my presence, everything you need to be enriched and empowered so that you can go from being a material being trapped in three dimensions to being liberated all the way through the seventh dimension.
Yeah.
All the knowledge you will need to operate and the judgment and increased mental capacity and awareness that you will need for all of these gifts, I am absolutely capable of supplying you with a sufficient amount of these things. And the thing that makes Yahweh so unique, besides the fact he is the only actual God, besides the fact that he created the universe and conceived life within it, wrote the DNA code to make life so expressive, is that he's humble. He knows he's God. He's the opposite of the Quran, where Allah is constantly bragging that he is the biggest, the best, the smartest, the omnipresent, the greatest there is. And of course, he's none of those things. He's a snake. But the real God doesn't need to brag. And he doesn't brag. He wants to be approachable. It's one of the reasons that he prefers to communicate through people is because when he communicates through dunderheads like me, and to a large degree, Abraham wasn't the sharpest guy around either. But when he communicates through people, then we're put in a position where we can choose not God. He's not so imposing that it's either, you choose them or you're scared to death. God wants us to be able to make an informed decision. And all he's saying here is, I'm satisfactory, I'm sufficient. I will honor my promises. I will do what I have promised to do. You will receive the benefits that are necessary to enjoy my company forevermore. But I'm not going to be so imposing that you're not comfortable in my presence. There are 4 days remaining to be fulfilled as we broadcast here in July of 2024. And any one of them could rise to the occasion of the Day of Yahweh, all of which are near, since the furthest is now less than a decade removed from the time that we're speaking to you this evening. And we are now in the shadow of Shavuot. 2024, May 22nd, is now just 2 years away from May 22nd of 2026. So the days that this Day of Yahweh could potentially be are May of 2026, May 22nd, that's the fulfillment of Shavuot on a Shabbat. And it would also include the Teruah in gathering, and that is on September 25th and 2033. So that's the second option for the Day of Yahweh. In addition to the first day of Sukkah, which is exactly 10 years removed from what occurred on October 7th of 2023, and that great assault against Israel, in this case, on the first day of Sukkah in 2033, God's going to transform the entire earth to the conditions experienced in Eden, which means there'll be no religion, no politics, no forms of human governance, no deceptions of any kind, and no pollution. It will be a marvelous celebration of life. But the greatest of the 4 days that remain to be fulfilled on God's calendar will be Yom Kippur. It is the day of reconciliations that we have talked about. When Yahweh returns with Dod, he is returning at sunset in Jerusalem, October 2nd, 2033. And that is year 6,000 Yahs, the 120th Yobel year. And while it is interesting to note that three of these four fulfillments occur on a Shabbat, when God does his best work, be aware that neither Yahweh nor his son are returning like lambs. Been there, done that. The tremendous force that will be unleashed is to rid the world of the combatants and pollutants that have been so deadly and destructive. Now, we've talked about Shaddai. God is not approaching his children in a way to be pretentious. He is perfecting the planet for our benefit. He does not want to boast, but instead to perform. He's going to do a satisfactory job of restoring this blue planet in the midst of the space-time, such that it is a beautiful place to live. I actually have a hunch, and there's a number of places that seem to confirm this, that when God says he's going to create a new universe with us being present to witness it, I'm not so sure that the present universe needs to be destroyed. I think that we will have the opportunity to explore it. And this particular planet, if you were to return this planet to the conditions that were experienced in Eden, it would be such a treasure and such a wonderful place to live and to celebrate life that I'm expecting that that it will be part of our tomorrows for many, many, many tomorrows to come.
So that's funny, because I was just telling your wife something like that last night, that I think that when we witness creation, it will be, you know, when you're outside of time and you can see all possible outcomes,
mm-hmm.
and once you become eternal, like, once I'm eternal, I'll never not be eternal anymore. It's just how it is. You just exist eternal at that point. So at that point,
yeah.
you could go back and recreate or terraform Earth and live out existence almost again, but in perfection.
Yeah, you have to be a little bit careful about this. There's a really an interesting paradigm of maneuvering in time, such that going forward in time is permissible. Experiencing all time is permissible, but going back in time has to have tremendous limitations. So, it's because of the paradigms of what has occurred, has most certainly occurred, and therefore you can't change what has occurred. And if you did, you would end up with a an endless loop of disasters. So it is. We will be life. Life can enjoy all time at any time, can experience time in any way that it wishes to experience time, but either it stops time, so that if we wanted to, for example, it appears that the Covenant family is going to be very busy throughout eternity, working with Dode, because he's going to be a delegate. He'll be fun to work with. Yeah, it was fun to work with. Dode will be fun to work with. But he's going to delegate a lot, and we're going to be engaged doing things. But God's the opposite of a slave driver. You know, he's liberator. And so we will have lots of enjoyable vacation time, if you will, as part of this. And because of the nature of a spiritual being and the ability to slow time, if you wanted to take a Shabbat holiday, that could be 10 years from the way that you experience time. So we'll be able to slow time, and we'll be able to use time such that we can navigate great distances. You know, for example, if you were moving at the speed of light and you experience time as a photon of light, it takes no time to cross the universe. So right now the distances are insurmountable. We can't even approach, as a material being, you can't even approach the speed of light. All bad things happen as you even near it as a particle. But as an energy-based entity, we can move at the speed of light, but at the speed of light, it still is not going to take billions of light years to cross the existing universe, because our perception of time will be simply that the moment of travel will seem like a fraction of a second, because time can be experienced as a whole, and therefore you can travel billions of light years in no time. So it makes the universe accessible to us. So there's lots of concepts of time that enable us to enjoy this entire universe, to be at any part of it at any time, and still to enjoy a stretching time in any one place. And one of the beauties of that is that as a energy-based being, as light, we will also be able to enjoy what Einstein explained in that very beautiful formula, E equals MC squared, which means that matter and energy are the same thing, they're just different amounts of the same thing. So that if we as an energy-based being wish to enjoy what it's like to swim in, like, we have 90-degree tropical waters here. If you want to swim with sea turtles and dolphins, you can do it quite comfortably. And if you wanted to feel the sand between your toes and the waves lapping up and the warm tropical breeze, you can convert some of your spiritual energy into matter without diminishing who you are in any way, and then cause time to slow at that moment so that you can enjoy a wonderful holiday and 3 seconds later be back where you were.
That's really cool.
So it is. That's the kind of maneuvering time. But it may be possible to view things that happened in the past. For the most part, we don't want to do that, because the march of civilization has been a death march. It is very abusive to people. And there really was no civilization that treated its people or its neighbors well. They were all vicious. They were all religious. They were all counter to Yahweh, including God's own people. And I think it would be so sad and traumatic that that's really the last thing we would we'd want. And so I do think that because Yahweh loves animals. That's one of the things that we're told that he enjoyed doing with Adam, to the point that he was looking actually for a companion for Adam, which means that Adam would be able to have talked with them, and they with Adam will have a language we can actually communicate. But I think because of the nature of DNA, as we go forward in time, one of the interesting things we'll be able to do is conceive life and then communicate with that life.
That would be so cool.
So there are just so many wonderful things we have to look forward to. But to be part of all of that, you have to walk through the doorway that Dod holds the keys, that he himself opened by fulfilling Pesach, Passover, in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. And the following day, after his Bashar, corporeal body, fulfilled the Pesach, that he served as the one unyeasting our souls of the fungus of religious and political guilt. And he took all of our guilt with him into Sheol and deposited there in a black hole in hell, never to be seen again, which makes us look perfect in God's eyes. And then we become reborn spiritually as part of the covenant family on Bukhurim, following Dod home. Enriched and empowered by our God. This is the thing that God is offering. He offers it through the covenant and its conditions and benefits, and through the Moed Mikre that reinforce those promises. And so if you come to know Yahweh by name and embrace his son, accept the conditions of the covenant, and understand the purpose of the Moed Mikre, and accept the invitation, then these are things you will enjoy. But that is the only way to them. And you're not invited. In fact, you're disallowed if you're religious and political. So you will have to walk away from those things. This past 2 weeks ago, I guess, we had the assassination attempt on Donald Trump and the Republican convention. It was the hand of God that intervened to save him, and I can guarantee you that Yahweh and Donald Trump have no relationship whatsoever. I can also tell you that when the choice is between who would become president, if Biden were to continue to run and win, he is so incapacitated that his vice president would become president, and she is among the 20 most anti-Semitic politicians in Washington. And so if Kamala Harris becomes president, it is devastating for Israel, and Donald Trump turned out to be as pro-Israel as any president in American history. So God would clearly have a preference there, but God doesn't play politics. And so he most certainly did not intervene to save Donald Trump. And somebody with Donald Trump's ego is never going to be accepted in Yahweh's family. As a matter of fact, the very realization that to run for president you are political would exclude you from the covenant family. The first condition of the covenant is to walk away from your country. And in Abraham's case, it was from Babylon, which is where religion and politics were first commingled and integrated. So this is where we find ourselves with Yahweh saying that he is sufficient to meet the needs of his people at this time. Now, there will be at this time an all-consuming fire that is going to be incinerating most of the world. This fire initially will be of man's doing. We can expect a nuclear exchange between nations. We can expect the blazes being an extension of what Hezbollah is doing now in northern Israel, engulfing it in flame. We can expect that could well be an asteroid strike at this time. This could be a super volcano erupt. We are warming as a planet and part of annual cycles, but that warming period is going to be more conducive to fires. This is something that God is not necessarily opposed to doing, because the best way to rid the world of trash is to incinerate it. And behind those flames, God's going to create this beautiful garden. So, while it could be, Yahweh is doing is he incinerates the religious and political, the conspiratorial, incinerating the trash, if you will. It could also be of man's doing, and that as that fire rages, God will terraform what remains of the earth. But if it is the latter, we are being encouraged to sound the shofar, to warn the world about what lies ahead. Otherwise, if blown after the blaze ensues, it would serve only serve the purpose, really, if the fire is of man's doing. But this is the statement that God said to open what is now the second chapter of Yoel. This is Yoel, Joel 2:1. To you, Yahweh, I call out. Kara. One of my favorite Hebrew terms, the verb is to invite and to summon, to read and recite, to greet and to welcome, to proclaim. So to you, Yahweh, I call out, for indeed, fire has devoured the dwelling places where the word is questioned, and ablaze with flames are all the trees of the field. Sound the shofar in Zion, and among the signs posted along the way, signaling future action, providing a warning, an explanation, and a shout of exaltation from Ruah, which is the basis of Teruah, on the set-apart mountain, which would be that whole ridge line of Zion that runs between those home and Yahweh's home on Mount Moriah, which means to revere Yah. Be roused to anger, all of you who live in the land, because the day of Yahweh's return is near. It's interesting that Yahweh would conclude this, or the prophet would conclude it by saying, be roused to anger, all of you who live in the land, because the day of Yahweh's return is near. I said something probably the first time 15 years ago that I'm sure is still shocking for many, but it is that hate is a virtue, and that you can't love without hating, and that until we know what to hate and how to hate, it's impossible for us to be compassionate. And so progressives and liberals have completely corrupted this concept of hate, turning hate into a dirty word that should be avoided at all costs. But we must hate the religious who mislead billions and cause them to do things like we witnessed Muslims doing in Israel, torturing, mutilating, raping, abducting, mass murdering. It is moral and wise to hate such things. It is moral and wise to hate a religion like Christianity that robbed God's Son, our Savior, of all of His accolades and of the great gifts that He has provided us. One should hate pedophiles and pedophilia, rape and rapists, murder and mass murderers. We need to know what to hate and then how to hate. You don't hate by punching somebody in the nose. You don't hate by shooting someone. No, you hate by exposing the person who is doing the heinous act, stopping them if you can, but by using words. You know, if you're in a position where you can and there's somebody raping an innocent child, by all means, intervene and stop it.
Right.
But our hate ought to be expressed by wielding words wisely. It's what Yahweh did, and we're being encouraged at this time to hate. Why? Because the world is being torn apart, because God's people, the Israel, are being hated upon and attacked and dehumanized and demonized. And the cry is to exterminate them. And we ought to hate that. There is a war going against not only God's people, but against his Torah. And religious Jews will be leading that parade. We ought to know what to hate and how to hate and to join our God in hating that which is hostile to his people. When you despise the rapist, you can be compassionate to the women and preclude the next rape.
Right.
And so these are concepts that God wants us to understand. Now, as it relates to the shofar, we have been conditioned to associate the ram's horn, the shofar, with the celebration of the Mikra invitations, particularly of Shavuah and Teruah. And first, I thought mostly of Teruah, where God makes a big deal of it. But clearly, God speaks of this shofar being blown also on Shavuah. So it is something that is used to announce the harvest of Shavuah and Teruah, which are the two major harvests. But it's also designed to draw attention to any important message or event. And this one and day certainly qualifies. But be aware of the distinction that for most people of the world at this time between Kippurim and Sukkah. God is not a happy camper at this point on Kippurim. He'll be a happy camper come Sukkah because all of the irritants are gone. But not on Kippurim. On Kippurim, he has a job to do, which is to cleanse the world, purge the world of religion and politics and conspiracy and all caste systems that have abused and enslaved people and systems that have sought to control people. So God is not happy at this point. He is cleaning house, ridding the world of those who have been so caustic to his creation, so that it is a date that he is committed to saving and protecting his covenant family. And let's be clear. There's only one place on earth that really matters to God. Now, he's going to terraform the entire planet, but there's only one place on earth that really matters to God.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Sion on Moriah.
Mm-hmm.
This is the epicenter of where today mm-hmm. ends and tomorrow begins. And I have asked for the opportunity, I don't know if I'll be given that opportunity or not, to be the person who gets to destroy the Dome of the Rock and Aska Mosque. Yah was going to build his own house for the Covenant family. Dode will help. We may be able to make some contribution, but it's going to be constructed of light, so it's going to be a pretty spectacular home. Multidimensional, I'm certain, a portal to heaven. And
okay.
But I do want to be part of the Dome of the Rock. I mean, if Elia and I are asked to convey Yahweh's message on Mount Moriah, then the last thing I want to have to endure is a lot of black-suited morons as Herodim bobbing their heads at the Western Wall as if it was some kind of religious icon. I'd like to begin terraforming there and then to completely obliterate all traces of Islam on the Yahweh's home, the Temple Mount. So I hope to have that opportunity, but understanding that these are the kinds of things that are going to happen on Zion and Moriah upon Yah's return. This is what the prophet says. It will be a day of darkness during a time of ignorance and confusion when much is obscured and when there is a reduction of the sun's light, a day of obscuring phenomenon, glooming and miserable, similar to a swarthy blackness, which is spread out upon the mountains with an enormous number of dim-witted and unenlightened people, so numerous as to be uncountable, and the likes of which has never existed previously, even to the dawn of time. And after this, it will never occur again throughout all the years, generation to generation. But we do not have enough time to fully explain this, so this is a wonderful place for us to start. I will probably devote 30 minutes to this magnificent statement at the beginning of our program next week. There are just so much richness in this what it means to be in a time of ignorance. What is that ignorance? What is being obscured? What is it about the sun's light that God is talking about? Is he actually literally talking about this orb, the R star in the sky? Or is he instead talking about his son, Dode, and all of the lies that have created the counterfeits and the myths to rob him of his accolades and achievements? Is this the result of religion gone amok and trying to devastate Israel and in cahoots with politics? That is the obscuring phenomenon, is that man's wars have kicked up this much impediment in the sky. Is Yahweh speaking specifically of the solar and lunar eclipse that are going to take place in year 6000 Yah, in the fall on both Teruah and on Kippurah? And of course, this dim-witted and unenlightened people that are so numerous as to be uncountable. Is this the thousand times iteration of the aerial and militant attack on Israel that is so vastly worse than what they experienced, God's people experienced on October 7th of 2023? And following the creation of a Palestinian state of terrorists for Islam, Israel will be so vulnerable to this as it will be unavoidable. As Neville Chamberlain's Peace in Our Time led directly to the Second World War, this will just be much more devastating. And just like the Holocaust was the most hellish part of that war, Muslims attacking Israel in genocidal fashion will be the worst part of World War III. That is where we're headed. And the prophet Joel wants us to know about it. And so we're going to share what we know with you at this time next week. And then we will share what Yahweh is offering as the great exception to what man is offering, in contrast to what man is offering. So I wish you a wonderful rest of your Shabbat. I thank you for listening. I'm delighted that we can announce that we have books again at Amazon. I'm also delighted that we have the team focused now on many more options regarding how you can come to know Yahweh through the YouTube channels Yada Yahweh and Yada Yah Radio, through this wonderful website, yadayah.com, through the 35 books that are part of the Yada Yah family of written material through this program as well, through the social media outreach that continues to grow. There are so many ways now that we are reaching out to God's people, calling them home. May Yah bless. We wish you a wonderful week. We'll be back with you this time next week.
Good night, my friend.
Good night, guys.
Oklahoma's premier vacation spot is coming spring 2025. Ocana Resort and Indoor Water Park is nestled along the river in downtown Oklahoma City. Enjoy the thrill of the 100,000 square foot indoor water park and outdoor adventure lagoon. Indulge in over a dozen dining options and a swim-up bar. Relax in world-class hotel rooms showcasing spectacular views. Be the first to dive in and visit OconaResort.com. That's OconaResort.com.